which is held quarterly. We will first have an introduction, a roll call.
Deaf Blind Advisory Meeting, July 27th, 2021.
Lisa,
I think you're muted.
It's Lisa Tangway. I'm here.
Thank you. Sue Pedersen. Archie Santos.
I'm here.
So out of the names I just called, just to be sure that nobody was muted and thinks they said they were present, I'm going to indicate these are the individuals who I did not hear any response when I called your name. So if you are on the call, you must have been muted when I called your name if you responded. So one last opportunity to let me know if you are present by unmuting. Muriel Apero? Horton? Patterson? Is there anyone else whose name I did not call? If you would be so kind as to identify yourself, or the interpreter could identify whom. Very well, Madam Chair. I believe you can take the meeting. We have the attendance.
Okay, terrific. So we knew last meeting minutes, so I will give you 3 minutes to review.
This is Mary Sue. I just wanted to let you know we do have someone who's going to be jumping in a few minutes to take over spotlighting.
May I have a motion to adopt the approval of last meeting minutes, which, let's see, what was that? April 27th? 2021.
I approve.
Sandy, great. Second?
Rick seconds it.
Awesome. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Jesse, Eric, and Lisa, all aye.
Eligibility of consumer applicants. $2,175 for performing assessments in clients' homes, $9,292 to purchase equipment and upgrades that were directly installed, $1,920 for installation of devices and training, $3,056 for administrative costs, and $1,239 for additional technology devices that were placed into inventory. That's how a total of $18,060 was arrived at. Home visits were resumed during those 3 months. And another notice is that for the third consecutive year, the Access Through Technology program is sponsoring the annual walk and roll event at Walnut Hill Park in New Britain. And that is coming up tomorrow, interesting, the 28th at 5 p.m. So that's always a really interesting event at Walnut Hill Park in New Britain tomorrow, 5 p.m. For the third year in a row, Access Through Technology will be sponsoring Walk and Roll. That's the report in its entirety.
Okay, do we have questions? Great. Next on the list is new business. That will be Brian Sigmund.
Thank you. Am I able to be heard? Am I able to be heard?
We can hear you,
Brian.
Okay, thank you. I have multiple screens open on this very small laptop screen, so I'm actually not able to see the Zoom meeting. So at the moment, we continue with the hope that spotlighting has either been resolved, because it's going on 10:30. Here's the report for fiscal 21, which ended June 30. This was a year that was entirely consumed with COVID, where what we would call forward-facing services were more fully resumed only in the last month of the fiscal year in June. So these figures definitely are reflective of a year in which the world as we knew it was very much in reduced social interaction capacity. So what we have here is a report that indicates that Oak Hill had 44,897 contracted for 32 clients, of whom no dollars were spent, and therefore no clients received these services through the Community Advocacy Network, or CAN, was contracted to receive $141,353, of which they expended $64,771. There were also an additional $4,322 that were for services provided in fiscal year 20, but were paying too late to be paid in fiscal year 20, so they were paid at the beginning of fiscal year 21. So CAN was able to serve 17 of their 24 clients. United Cerebral Palsy was contracted for $9,999 to serve one client. They provided $7,227 in services to that client. additionally $659 from prior year services rolled forward and were paid at the beginning of fiscal year 21. Her client AJ contracted amount was $9,987, of which nothing was expended, so that client did not receive services. Client JS, the budgeted contract was $2,536, out of which $1,527 was expended. Client JR was contracted for $9,999, and the entire grant was expended on that client. So that was expended in full. So in total, $1,771, of which $8,524 was expended on services provided in fiscal year 21. $4,981 was expended from fiscal year 20 bills that rolled forward. Out of the 60 clients overall, between all these vendors combination, out of the 60, 20 received services, with the majority through communication advocacy network. Additionally, there were some other expenditures. We expended $8,476 on interpreter services, $2,017 on rehabilitation technology services, $13,835 on Braille instruction, $4,697 on adaptive devices. So in total, those additional expenditures accounted for $30,025 in expenditures, bringing the total of the entire allotment, the total of the $265,738 allotment, total expenditures were
$118,530. Brian, if we can interrupt just a second, we're going to switch interpreters.
Okay, no problem.
We're good.
Okay, Brian, thank you.
Brian, did we cover the Oak Hill program at all? Oh, okay.
Yes.
Great. Sorry.
Yeah, Oak Hill had $44,897 allocated for 32 clients, of which nothing was expended. So this report that I just gave, there is an Excel spreadsheet that Lisa Tangway did forward that has all of this information on it. And this spreadsheet actually also has the FY22 contracted amounts. But I think at this point, since this is its own agenda item, I'll stop here in case there's any questions on fiscal year 21 final expenditure. And again, because I only have the one monitor, I am not able to actually at the moment look at my Zoom screen. So if there are questions, I need them vocalized either through the interpreter or directly. So I'm not going to see if a hand is raised. Hey, Madam Chair, sounds like there are no questions. So that concludes this agenda item.
Okay, next agenda item. Service provider for the year 2022.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. So this is Brian, and I'll continue. So the contracts for fiscal year 22, which the committee approved, now move forward, and the contracts have been written and either have been fully executed
executed or have been sent to the vendors, and we're just waiting for the vendors to sign and return them to us. So we were very pleased to see how rapidly our contracting unit was able to get these contracts put together and sent out to the vendors so that there, at least from our end, would not be any potential interruption affecting for moving these things along so expeditiously. So here's where we are at. For FY22, which started earlier this month, July 1st, for Oak Hill, the contracted amount is $38,354, which will be for 32 clients. For Country Casino Network, the contracted amount is $141,353 to serve 24 clients. Contracted amount is $9,999 to serve one client. For AJ, the contracted amount is $9,987. For client JS, the contracted amount is $5,209. For client JR, the contracted amount is $9,990. And we have a client, DH, it's $9,990. And just in case I misspoke, I'm not sure, client JR was $9,999. So there are through these contracts that I just named, and the total of all these contract awards is $224,891. Additionally, $1,000 has been set aside for Braille instruction. So total, the amount of funds that are obligated is $239,891, which is what the allotment is for fiscal year 12. The entire allotment has been committed in these categories. Are there any questions for the fiscal 22 appropriation or?
I know that this is Hannah Tyler, the chair. For J client JS, contract for 2021 was 2005, and then 2022 is now doubled. The reason there must be an extra need is like 5,209. I know that's the only change I noticed.
Brian, Chris, could you please address that?
Sure, Brian. So we were approached by the Gardner, yes, about his need for additional services, and we ran that request through the Client Service Plan Review Committee, and then brought it to the full body. I don't believe it was in the past meeting, although it may have been. I thought it was in the meeting that took place around the beginning of this calendar year. And so that's in recognition of additional needs that were demonstrated by.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Chris.
Sure.
Zion, are there any other questions regarding the fiscal year 2022? I'm going to please just give me a moment to open them?
Sure.
I distributed these on July 1st, just to refresh everybody's memory. At the April meeting, this was an agenda item, but there was no time on that agenda to discuss it. Sorry. So, because we had to have something in place for July 1 to respond to the fact that staff were now resuming services in their duty stations, so it wasn't just going to be 100% telework any longer, I needed to put something forward. I therefore shared this draft with the members of the committee as it was going through its development. I did get some feedback, and I do thank the members that did provide me with some very valuable feedback. I incorporated it to the extent I could, and then I issued it out with the understanding that we would have an opportunity to have some discussion today, because if there are needs for modifications, certainly we can have that discussion today. There is one item I just want to put forth before I pause for any discussion, and that has to do with the wearing of masks. I understand the complexities of wearing a mask or having your SSP wear a mask when you're interacting in situations that are less than 6 feet. These protocols allow for people to be unmasked if they're beyond 6 feet from each other. But when the distance is within 6 feet, employees are required to follow these protocols. And in fact, we have even stricter protocols for wearing masks within our buildings, even when we may not be encountering anybody. If we're walking in any shared space within our buildings, we have to be prepared that we may encounter somebody who may come, and then we would find ourselves at less than 6 feet without time to respond, which is why we are required to wear masks when we're traveling in any shared space indoors. Outdoors, you can clearly acknowledge that people are coming. Have to follow these protocols. They were issued by the Department of this process reviewed the Centers for Disease Control's most recent recommendations to incorporate some of the easements that had been in the prior protocols but no longer appear in these protocols. I've tried to make these as manageable as practical while still maintaining the highest level of safety for all concerned. And then the final thing that I will say is that these are the protocols that we have put out there. We are no longer requiring that the vendors that deliver these services certify when they bill. And if a private provider has their own protocols that they are following, we, I will say, do not have enforcement authority on these protocols. These are the practices we as employees are following, and these are the practices that we recommend. But if a fee-for-service vendor has their own established protocols or how they are going to deliver services to their clientele, our protocols do not overwrite their protocols. So that means that if there was a vendor that chose a different approach to masking, as an example, or a different vendor who decides that they must find out if people are vaccinated or not vaccinated, we don't impose these requirements to overwrite their protocols. We are not asking people if they are vaccinated. We are working from the premise of making sure that we are protecting ourselves so that no matter whom we encounter, vaccinated or not vaccinated, we've taken appropriate protocols. This moment I'll stop and open it up, Madam Chair, to whatever conversation, questions, what have you.
Thank you, Brian. Are there any questions, any comments people like to make?
Lisa, we just need a moment for her to be spotlighted.
Thank you.
Hi, good morning, everyone. This is Lisa Flaherty Bond. Thank you. I do have a question. If you could expand on the mask issue, and do we know if there's like a targeted end date? Because, I mean, we don't know what's happening with COVID. And also, if there's even going to be a booster shot encouraged. So how are we going to, I'm thinking, you know, I want to make sure all this information gets shared with the deafblind community in advance so that they are fully aware of what's happening.
Brian, thank you, Lisa. Those are excellent questions, and I'm so glad you asked them. And I'm glad you asked them because it brings to light the uncertainty of where we're going from here. We, these are currently have the option, not everyone is doing this, but we have the option in most cases to telework 50% of the time, and that will carry forward till September 1st. We do not know what will come after September 1st. We are awaiting instructions. Similarly, the masking instructions that we are all following do not present an end date at the moment. The document I was working from had an implementation date for the return to the office, but nothing that indicated that this will go in such a date and then change to, let's say, lesser masking requirements. We simply do not know. The additional uncertainty of the new COVID variant is something that we are all keenly following and want to certainly have the most current information on what the variant has as an impact on individuals who both are vaccinated as well as those who are not vaccinated. And we're in a phase, I think, where we're awaiting those outcomes, or at least the information that becomes available, even if it's not the final information provided to us. But I just need to stress that I am not the creator of the done wearing masks. State of masks if they're within 6 feet, and the clients will need to wear masks if they're in 6 feet until such time as higher level options. In regards to the vaccination question you had and the booster, I have not. I think many people have heard that there are plans to make a booster available, but beyond hearing that more anecdotally, I have not read anything indicating it might be available, nor have I seen anything that would indicate that those that receive the booster, at least in terms of entering a state facility, would be treated in a different way from somebody who may not have been vaccinated. Since we are not asking if people are vaccinated, our protocol is to treat safe as possible. So unfortunately, Lisa, any additional information beyond what I've reported, but I do thank you again for raising these questions, because I know that while you were the one who asked it, probably many other individuals on this call would have had the exact same questions.
Oh, you are there. Did you forget about the deadline meeting? You're coming up. You're coming up next. So look at my email I sent out this morning. It's the Zoom.
Okay,
in the topic from this morning.
Hello?
Okay.
Alex?
Bye.
Henry?
Okay.
Hello?
Okay. Everyone, my name is Elvin.
Deafblind Advisory Meeting, Part 2, July
27, 2021. Presumption was correct. Thank you, Jesse. So I'm going to go on now to the budget update. I have in the past reported on the challenges that our vocational rehabilitation program budget has had. Several years ago, I would be telling you all that we were at risk of running out of funds and potentially needing to go into an order of selection. But since COVID, it's the exact opposite. We have funds, plentiful and available. We have very little to expend it on.
I found Andrew.
Vendors have started resuming in-person service. Programs that have offered residential services have resumed offering those services, and we're appreciative for that. And we have indeed initiated the purchase of those types of services now that they've been resuming. But as we come toward the end of our federal fiscal year, which ends on September 30th, we are federal fiscal year 20 funds that rolled into fiscal year 21. We are running to the point where whatever we don't expend, we will need to give back the federal government. We had wondered whether in Congress their appropriations committee would, in the House, add a provision that would permit another year of carry forward. But we have learned that what has come out of the House Appropriations Committee does not include carry forward provision for an additional year. We do anticipate reverting a substantial amount of the unspent federal 2020 dollars back to the federal government. Now, our federal 21 allotment is almost entirely untouched, and that will carry forward into fiscal year 2022 to add on to the 2022 allotment that we'll get. So our vocational rehabilitation program will have ample funds to serve all eligible clients, but our major concern is whether we will have expended enough in order to meet our maintenance of effort requirements with our non-federal dollars. So I have stated in the past it is likely that our program would seek a waiver, as many other states have experienced the same challenges, so that we would at least not have to pay a penalty for not being able to achieve it. Additionally,
are supported employment dollars, while not a lot of funding, only $50,000, we may not be... for those services. One last thing on the budget, piece of good news. I am actually not recalling if I announced this other piece, so I'll start with this other piece that I may have announced.
I'll send it.
Some of you may recall a rehabilitation teacher named Julie cleanly passed away a little over, that is exclusively dedicated to providing independent living services to the clients served by our adult services program, and that is wonderful. Additionally, we have been successful in working with the Croteau family. They had left some funding when Ann Croteau passed funds. So for instance, since the entire funding for the fiscal year 2022 deaf-blind community inclusion I covered previously, it did not leave funds for interpreter services. The Croteau Fund is now a place we can turn to.
They still need someone to possibly come in and be there in person to help them so they can participate in the virtual format. So that we can make sure that there's...
Thank you, Lisa. Again, an excellent question. And I'm pleased to report that we foresaw that need, and the contracts for all of the vendors that were written include provisions to allow for virtual services so that the support provider can indeed provide those services virtually and be with the client if the need be, so that the client can participate virtually. So we've left that very flexible so that the support service provider and the client will work out what methodology is the most effective so that a client who served through these funds has services that are being provided and offered virtually. We felt this was very important because we recognize that there are many things that are still being offered only in a virtual setting or in what they refer to as a hybrid setting where people can choose in person or through Zoom the opportunity to participate. We wanted to be sure that the contract language allowed for that option. And I'm pleased to say that language is in the contracts.
Perhaps virtual to an iPad or a computer, it would be nice since the funds have not been fully used, the people can also, say, communicate with their families. All that would be a great asset.
One has the vendor who has the contract scoop that into the provisions of that contract, and that results in community inclusion. I hope that would be included. But I want to respond by saying that can serve any client of adult services through an independent living plan or waiver much as the McLean funds could be utilized for some of the services that you refer to, because communication, one of the categories under independent living, so there could be otherwise served through one of these contracts where they could work through the social worker and adult services to have an independent living plan developed where communication is one of the goals, and then there could be some purchased services to achieve that goal.
Brian, this is Lisa Clary Bond.
Yes, hi.
Sorry about that. Yes, I'd like to add a suggestion. If we could get this maybe in print so that we could talk about what it is that is necessary, what is needed in more detail, like, and who could, and what kind of supports could be provided and what kind of settings could be provided. Like what Hannah suggested about them being able to communicate with their families is very important also. So I think that, you know, a lot of people weren't aware of that, that would be a possibility. So if we can maybe get this into some sort of a printed format so people are more aware of what's allowed.
But specifically the terminology interpreter in one, and also communication facilitator, CF, in another. But
thank you.
Jesse speaking. One second, please.
Okay.
I mean, what Lisa was saying about, you know, with deaf blind individual that doesn't, you know, cannot access something. Or, you know, with their video phone or something, you know, with anything. Let's say, suppose, a deaf blind individual, you know, in Massachusetts, let's say, would come into Connecticut and wants to participate in some sort of meeting that's being held here. It's interesting, then, who is responsible for those funds? You know, so it's, again, because they're not, you know, they don't have, they're not involved with FFP program in Connecticut. So who, my question to you is, who would be contacted for a person like that who's coming from out of state to participate with the Connecticut?
Ryan, and I will respond to Jesse and Lisa collectively, because I think the answer is the same. We do have on our website the Adult Services Policy Manual. And when we start talking about eligibility for Connecticut services, so registry to even be considered at meeting to make the, I can't like speak to who the entity is, might organize that meeting and whether or not they're going to make that meeting accessible. When we host a meeting such as today's, we cover those costs to make the meeting accessible, participate because it is a public meeting. But when it comes to individual,
if they are seeking independent living services and they are a resident of Connecticut who's legally blind or deafblind, they should reach out to Margie to begin the process of seeking to develop eligibility for independent living services and subsequently an independent living plan or waiver.
This is Lisa, thank you. We're going to switch for a moment, just to switch the interpreter.
I do have one question. might be slightly off track, but it is regarding the budget. I got together with some friends up in Barkhamsted, Connecticut, and I was told there was a camp up there for the blind. It was in Sands Cliff Cove, Barkhamsted. It's a man-made lake. So what I'm getting at is some of these extra funds through McLean or Croto family, would it be possible to use some of that for a camp? The camp was closed, so I don't know if anybody is aware of that. I'm just throwing this out. Perhaps some of that could be used for camp.
Lisa, this is Brian. Lisa had her hand up, so she may indeed have a response to
that. Okay, great.
Hi, this is Lisa. I just wanted to respond quickly and really just kind of throw out a quick comment. That camp though is specific to blind, not deafness at all. I mean, just again, because I'm just confused as to why it was brought up in this particular meeting and not, you know, just a more, you know, general, you know, blind, you know, meeting, you know, not deaf blind, because it seems like it's a different issue. Because this is, again, this meeting is specific, this advisory group is specific to deafblind. So maybe, I'm just saying that maybe if it has nothing to do with deafness, maybe just in the spirit of clarity, like maybe it should be not raised here. Maybe it should be in the other, in the, you know, the other venue. That's just my quick comment.
Okay. Thank you, Lisa. I didn't know what the camp actually was for specifically, since it was just for blind. I agree, it'd be brought up in a different meeting. Thank you, Lisa. Okay, can we move on to our next agenda, legislative update. Brian?
Thank you, it's Brian. I don't believe Andrew has joined us.
I am here.
So I do have one item.
I am here, Brian.
Oh, excellent, thank you. All right.
But
I'm going to start with a federal item, and then I'll turn it over to Andrew for the state update. In Congress, there is a bill that has been raised. It's H.R. 2073. This bill would phase out subminimum wage and increase the hourly rate, the minimum wage, to $15 an hour for people with disabilities. It would be a 5-year phasing for it to take full effect. There is what's referred to as a notice of rulemaking, where they are seeking public comments on this. The comment period closes on August 23rd, and I will be forwarding this link to the members of the committee so that everyone will be aware of it. And if anyone wishes to submit public comments on this proposed change, you can follow the process that's covered through the link. But I wanted to make people aware of this. You may or may not be aware that there are still some providers that pay less than the minimum wage to people with disabilities under a provision of, I believe it's regulation, that allows for special permits to the providers to allow for rates of pay less than the minimum wage, and this would phase that out. And with that, that's the federal update. I can certainly turn it now over to Andrew. I'm glad he's joined us. Andrew?
Yes, thank you, and I'm sorry I was late to the meeting. The legislature, as you probably all know, has done its work. It ended most of its work in June, although they've had special sessions to take up other business that has come up But the bills that we might be interested in were either completed or not by their regular adjournment date in June. And there were a few bills that passed of interest, some that didn't. There was a bill to redesignate guide dogs as service animals and to have Connecticut's laws mirror the federal laws when it comes to service animals, but that didn't ultimately pass. It may come up again next year. There was a bill that did pass creating a requirement that the Department of Economic and Community Development study a workforce development pipeline for persons with disabilities. And I know that Brian and other people at our agency have already been in consultation with that department to share with them our knowledge about providing work and helping people with disabilities get work. There is a few bills that were passed regarding senior citizens, which of course we pay attention to since people who are older are covered under the Department of Aging and Disability Services. A number of bills focused on nursing home life because of all of the bad things that happened in nursing homes under COVID. Some of the bills are to allow people in nursing homes to have access to technology in their rooms so they can stay in contact with family members. They also raised the personal needs allowance for the first time in many years. That's the little bit of money you can keep each month from your Social Security check if you're in a nursing home, since your money will all go to the nursing home. But they let you keep some for spending money, and it had been about $60 a month for a long, long time, and they've raised it to $70. I'm rounding those numbers. There was also a bill passed creating a mental health bill of rights for people who are deaf, deafblind, or hard of hearing. That was House Bill 6637. And that lists in statute more fully than before the rights of people who are deaf, deafblind, and hard of hearing for mental health care and access to mental health care and access to appropriate mental health care. And of course, meaning people who are, sign language access and also access to professionals who are sensitive to and knowledgeable about the differing needs for people who are deaf or hard of hearing or deafblind. And that became law. The original bill had provision to hire more staff to work on these issues at several agencies. That part didn't pass, but the Bill of Rights language did pass. Let's see, I'm just looking at, there's an act involving our agency a little bit to study senior center services. And the bill, the agency bill for Aging and Disability Services passed. It almost passed last year until COVID shut down the legislature. That doesn't make too many big sweeping changes. It makes some changes to our assistive technology program. It makes some operational changes to the advisory board for people who are persons who are deaf or hard of hearing. It did change the name of the advisory board for people who are deaf and hard of hearing to the advisory board for people who are deaf, hard of hearing, or deafblind. Deafblind had not been included in the title. There was and is a representative of the deafblind community on that board, but deafblind is now in the name of the board, and that's brand new. And I'm just checking some other bills to be sure that I've probably left something out, and I'm happy to answer any questions if there are any. And broadly put, our budget stayed, well, relatively healthy compared to years past. This was not a year where the budget of our agency was cut in a big way. I assume Brian has already talked about the budget line for your activity, which is still substantial, though not as big as it once was, but still substantially close to that former amount. And I don't think I have anything else to say. I apologize because I'm probably forgetting something, but I'm done for now. Again, any questions, I'd be happy to field. Oh, I'm not on the video. Sorry. There I am. I should be on the video because I got a haircut just for this meeting. That's not true. I got a haircut, though.
Thank you, Andrew. Since there are no more questions, then we can move on.
I have a question.
Okay, hold on. Any questions?
I have a question. This is Alan Gunsberg. Brian, what was the House resolution bill, the federal bill that you were talking about, the number?
It is H.R. 2373. And 2373, and I will send out this link to the public comment area. Hopefully by the end of today, I'll send it to all the members that are, if you receive the agenda to this meeting, then you would receive this link, because I'm going to do a reply to all and utilize that to send the link out.
Okay. And in regard to House, the state bill, H.R. 6121, the discussion, I guess you guys are already having at BSBP and probably at the other agency, a discussion with the Workforce Council to give them ideas or on what should be in the new regulations as it pertains to fast tracking individuals with disability through the job search and job acquisition process.
This is Brian. There was some initial discussion. There was a meeting, but at this point, I don't know when the next meeting will be.
Thank you, Brian.
You're welcome.
Okay. The next on the agenda, BESB Director Report. That will be Brian Sigmund again.
Thank you. This is Brian. And there have been some staff transitions I'd like to make some folks aware of. Barry Rita, a long-standing employee of our bureau, whom was our transition school-to-work coordinator in the vocational rehabilitation program, has retired. Additionally, in our children's services program, Lisa Pruner, who was a long-standing teacher of students with visual impairments, as well as Yvonne Locke, who was also a teacher of students with visual impairments, have both retired. All three of those positions, we are certainly hopeful that we can obtain refill approval for those positions. And we're in the process of working those requests through all of the processes that would allow us to then seek advertisements to get new candidates. Additionally, Lauren Royce, who is a special assistant to the blind, has been promoted to become a teacher of students with visual impairments to replace an individual who had previously retired. Zachary Moore was promoted from Special Assistant to the Blind to Secretary 1 to replace a vacancy in our vocational rehabilitation program from someone who transferred to another agency. I also want to report, for those of you who may not have already heard it, I think many of you by now have heard it, I am also retiring. I'm going to be retiring effective October 1st of this year. So this will actually be my last meeting of the Deafblind Advisory Committee. And I want to express my heartfelt appreciation to all of you for the courtesies, the many courtesies that you've extended over the years. It's been my honor to have worked with this committee, and I thank you all for that. A couple other things I just want to mention. We have been working with the Department of Transportation and have actually now brought to successful conclusion the development of a pilot program that we're ready to launch with the Department of Transportation that will make the IRA
navigational software available to clients of BSBE at no cost. The Department of Transportation is looking to improve the quality of the experiences of folks that are legally blind and deafblind, and using public transit and also accessing the community. And IRA is a software that can be downloaded onto somebody's smartphone. It uses the camera of the smartphone, and there are trained assistants on the other side of that app, so that when you activate the app, they can assist with your navigation by seeing through your camera and then providing you with the feedback. And one question had come up as to whether this app is accessible for folks that are deaf and blind, and I forwarded that question on to the technical folks over at IRA, and they have offered to work with any individual who is deafblind, because there are ways to access through Braille interface for those who are Braille users in order to use that technology. But I at least wanted to say that we're getting ready, working with Department of Transportation, to roll out an announcement to everyone who is on our registry to make them aware of this. So while IRA typically has a fee for utilizing the service plan, there will be no fee for people that participate in this research to help DOT determine if IRA is a successful navigational aid for improving on people's, you know, experiences and getting about the community. So those are my updates, Madam Chair.
Yeah. Okay, that's fabulous. I think technology is a love-hate relationship. I love the technology, but at the same time, sometimes it drives you crazy. I do want to mention, since I myself have Usher syndrome too, I've been blessed. The mighty Lord up there gave me the talent, creative talent, and I have volunteered to create a logo for the Ushers Coalition. I don't know if you could see that. I'm wearing the shirt. That it's a conference for ushers, and they raise money for Ushers syndrome. And so I'm happy that they have selected me. It was a contest, and so that is the new logo that they are using now. I certainly would like to say that I'm proud of that. And again, I do want to stress with this COVID, people who haven't had their shots, to please make sure that you go through your health questions. Make sure that they ask you many questions before you decide to take a shot. I have many people around me who have had bad reactions. So I would stress that you fully investigate and research outside the mainstream media and CDC to understand what is inside. And that's all I can say. So are there any other announcements that people would like to make? Lisa, I believe.
Yes.
Go ahead, Lisa.
We're waiting for her to be spot. I think we have a new spotlighter, so we're waiting for her to be spotlit. Just a second.
There you go.
Okay, hi again, everyone. This is Lisa. I don't know exactly how to put this. this applies to old business, new business, announcements. So I'm just going to put it out there. Jesse and myself hosted the first deaf-blind, are going to be hosting the first deaf-blind retreat at Isola Bella, the camp that ASD has. That's going to be August 15th through the 21st in 2022. So that will be our first venture. Jesse will be the director. I will be the assistant director. Our mission in this camp is that we would like to encourage people in our state and from other states also who are deafblind to be able to come in and to work on developing, you know, their personal growth. And their, you know, their independence and their abilities to improve communication. We're also going to be focusing on pro-tactile. We are working also with SSPs and interpreters to provide a very successful camp experience so that everyone can work on their own individual development. So that's the goal. Right now we're talking, Jesse and I are looking at fundraising opportunities. I'm not sure, I mean, we have to, they'll need money for the campers to pay expenses for lifeguards, for you know, people who are going to be doing any kind of teaching or things like that. I mean, we have a lot of information we'll be providing. I feel that it's going to be a wonderful educational experience for our campers. And so I would like to ask those of you here and at BESB to please lend your support so that we can make this first camp a success. Again, it's going to be in August of 2022. Jesse, do you want to expand on anything that I said? All right, then. This is Jesse. I'm switching hats here. I represent ASD, but today I'm going to talk about the deafblind, the DBAC. The idea that we had for this retreat actually came from something where Lisa and I actually visited in the state of Washington, where they had a deafblind retreat. It's been running for many, many years. I believe more than 20 years, to be exact. Lisa and I went out, and we were so excited. The community, everyone was included. No one felt isolated. Everyone felt like they had full access to communication. They had SSPs that could provide the needs that we, you know, that we had for the needs we had. So we wanted to take that idea and see if we could do something here in New England. And we came up with our idea for our deafblind retreat here. Now, this retreat was supposed to happen this August 2021, but thanks to COVID, we decided it might be more successful if we wait until next summer. We will be having various programs that we will be setting up, but the goal is primarily education. Throughout COVID, many of our deafblind individuals have felt lost and out of contact, disconnected from so many people. So we want to teach them also about pro-tactile. It's a wonderful communication system that started back in 2007. And it's really taken on, you know, and become very successful. We also want to have some other programs, workshops that will educate, but it will be for an entire week, a full week retreat, and for our individuals who are deaf and blind, and we want to give them a lot of new experiences. For example, adaptive bicycling. because deafblind people can ride a bike. We have one individual who is in Bark Hampstead, who owns his own, who owns a store, and he will adapt the bikes. They're three-wheel bikes so that they are more stable. And I believe he did this back in 2019. It's a nice bike. Anyway, I digress. But we are going to have various programs and activities, and we will have, we're hoping that this will be our first camp. We're going to start small. We're thinking maybe 20 participants. And if we are successful, we hope to expand. And we have a lot of individuals here in Connecticut who are deafblind, many in New England that we expect will come and take advantage of this opportunity so that they can have this sense of community. And we will also have staff who are deafblind themselves who will be flying in from all over the United States to help as guides and to make this camp a success. So, or retreat, whatever you want to call it. But this is a deaf, blind, led, and run retreat. So sighted people are welcome to volunteer. We ask that they learn pro-tactile so that they can provide the appropriate supports and information to the individuals. But we want to get, the word out there. We want deaf-blind individuals to really develop a real good sense of self-esteem. Like I said, we're hoping that the numbers will start out at 20. We'll need about 10 staff and about 50 to 60 volunteers. Because we feel that it will be a wonderful learning experience for not only the deaf-blind individuals, but for all of those who are volunteering to assist, whether you work as an SSP or an interpreter or an ITP, if we have students who are in interpreter training programs, they could benefit from this experience also. I think that's it. I am, like I said, we're right now getting started on our fundraising. We are assuming that we are going to need approximately $40,000 to $50,000 because we want to make sure we have plenty of wiggle room in there. Right now, our biggest, cost is going to be food because we have to provide for three meals every day, and that's going to be a total of 8 to 9 days. So, anyway, we're still working on cost estimates for everything, but we're guessing somewhere in the range of $40,000 to $50,000. So I think that's it. I'll turn it back over to you, Hannah.
Well, Jesse, that sounds so exciting. I think that's a fabulous program, and Bark Hampstead's absolutely gorgeous up there. Are there any other comments that people like to make? Anything exciting up ahead?
If we can just pause for 1 second, we have to switch interpreters, please.
Sure. This is Hannah Tyler. I do want to make one comment. I don't know if everybody knows about this, but I was able to get, you can get your own traffic sign, like a yellow traffic sign, and it says deaf blind person crossing. I forget exactly what it says, but in our town, I live in Woodbury, Connecticut, they were able to create it, and they put up two signs a block away from our house in both directions because I walk on the road. I do have a dog, but the cars are flying by really fast. But it's something that's available in your town. You go to your town hall, you can request it if you know of anyone that walks on the road. It's just another sign that can announce and people to be careful, so you don't get run over, of course. So that's, it's out there that you can utilize. Well, we have about 15 minutes. Is there any other exciting comments that people, Jesse, I see your hand up.
Everyone, this is Jesse speaking again. I mean, in speaking with, you know, you're talking about Hannah with the death line and crossing that sign. I mean, that's great. That, you know, I mean, that I know in my town, we recently, there's kind of a, you know, a railroad along the, you know, so the railroad track, and, you know, you're crossing different tracks. I mean, of course, there's different places where you can cross the tracks, and it's, you know, it gets busy sometimes. What they did actually was set up a sort of like a lights, like there's no, it's not a stoplight per se, but it's kind of like, you know, you have to hit the button and then, you know, the lights will, you know, blink and, you know, on and off, and like, so will alert the drivers, but it's not deaf blind, you know, friendly, but I just wanted to let you know that that's another thing that's out there as well.
Mm-hmm. Lisa, I see your hand up.
Hi, this is Lisa again. And if we can just back up a little bit, Hannah, you were talking about something, and I don't know, I wanted to just kind of finish up about the camp before we just jump to another topic, because I just wanted to see if anybody in the group has any feedback, or any, you know, concerns. I mean, is there, you know, is this something that we should put in a formal proposal that should be voted on? You know, I mean, for, you know, I mean, I'm not really, you know, it's, I know several people are retiring, and I just wanted to see, I mean, again, we're it's not a formal proposal, but it is something we are proposing. So I just wanted to get any feedback from the group before we go ahead to another topic.
Hi, this is Sandy. Lisa, I think it's a wonderful idea. And I think what you need to do is put out information on how people can donate. Okay?
Hey. If there are no more comments or announcements.
Eric has his hand raised.
Eric.
Okay, I was thinking maybe let's at the next meeting, maybe we can actually have as an agenda item, maybe to discuss how, if, you know, maybe we can talk about how much, you know, like we can donate to this deafblind retreat that would be happening next August. Maybe have that as an agenda item, you know, that we can discuss the amounts that maybe we can, you know, or we can, you know, how much we can support or sponsor. Is that something that's a possibility to have that as an agenda item?
This is Brian. I think it's certainly fine for it to be an agenda item for discussion by the committee. And, you know, I think that where that discussion goes, the committee can weigh in on whether or not they think that there might be some role for some other formal funding stream. And certainly the Deafblind Community Inclusion Funds have been completely allocated for fiscal year 22. This does sound like this is an event that they're considering for fiscal year 23, however. So there might be some room for discussion as to how the FY23 funds might be utilized in the event that there are current vendors that perhaps still aren't utilizing their appropriations. But I don't see any reason why it couldn't be put as an agenda item. I just, you know, again, I won't be at that meeting, and I don't know, you know, what priorities
would go forward from that point on. But I guess the short answer to the question is certainly it can be put on the agenda.
I have one comment. I am saddened, Brian, that you are retired. I think you were a wonderful director. I'm sure they will find someone. I hope you enjoy your retirement.
Thank you very much. That's kind of you to say.
You will be greatly missed.
Ditto for me, Brian. Thanks for all the work you've done.
Yeah. You're welcome.
And Brian, you're getting applause from Lisa and from Eric as well.
Yes, I'm actually seeing it. Thank you. Thank you.
If there's no other announcements, may we have a motion to adjourn?
Sandy, I motion.
Second.
And Lisa seconds it.
All right. Everyone in favor?
Aye.
Eric and Lisa and Jesse as well all said aye.
Any abstain? All right. Meeting is adjourned. May you.